Connor Harris and Karis Jones are two members of the alto section of the British vocal group Stile Antico. While on tour in the United States, they spoke with me about their experiences with the group. Well, there are so many reasons to offer you congratulations. 2009 Gramophone Award, Grammy nominations, critical acclaim, commercial success. And it has all come together really since your 2007 debut recording, Music for Compline. I'm wondering, is this the career you expected when you went into music?
Not really. I don't think we dreamt of so much success so quickly. I mean, we didn't necessarily think that much that early on about what exactly it was that we wanted. We just really loved making the music. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make successful records, of course, but it just went beyond our wildest dreams.
Yeah. We recently had an exercise, back in 2005, when we had only been going a few years, we were still not really professional. We did an exercise where every member of the group wrote down where they thought we would be in 5 years' time. And we recently unearthed these things in a, you know, kind of time capsule manner and read them again. And our ambitions were, you know, to record a couple of CDs for a reasonable record company and maybe have a kind of slightly higher profile, and maybe we might have toured once to the US by that stage. And actually, here we are 5 years later, and we've got this amazing relationship with Harmonia Mundi. We now tour to the States on average twice a year. So it was really, really funny how far short our expectations fell of what's actually kind of happened.
Well, that's marvelous. Okay, so let's get down to the name of your group. It's Stile Antico, meaning old style, right? So would you talk about really more specifically and more in depth about what that means?
It's Stile Antico itself is a musical term, and you get it's kind of the opposite of something as well. So you have the Stile Antico, the old style, and the Stile Nuovo, the new style. It's particularly a musicological term applied to the music of Monteverdi, because Monteverdi clearly writes in both of these styles. But the greatest proponent of the Stile Antico style are people like Palestrina and the whole kind of world of 16th century Renaissance music. And then the Stile Nuovo leads seamlessly eventually into the Baroque style, which you know, you get much later on in the 17th century. We chose the name, I think, because it just perfectly defines the music that we really wanted to concentrate on, sounded a little bit exotic perhaps. We considered other very boring names like, you know, the Bird Singers and, you know, that sort of stuff, but we liked Stile Antico and it kind of stuck.
Yes, the only problem was we didn't quite think about how hard it would be for everyone to pronounce our name.
Why is that, do you suppose?
Well, anyone who knows Italian has no problems, but a lot of people look and they think, is that style, or they put the stress in the wrong place? But, you know, we know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't mind.
So I'm wondering, do you think, I know there are, for example, ensembles whose names incorporate the phrase Baroque orchestra, mm-hmm. that now play classical era music or play other eras of music, even contemporary music. I'm wondering if you think you will ever branch out to do music of other eras or maybe even contemporary music. Do you think that name in any way is going to be an artificial boundary?
I don't think it will be a boundary because, as you say, there are plenty of other groups. And in fact, many of the English groups that sing Renaissance music also sing contemporary music. That's a very common combination. They don't generally sing the music in between, which is designed for bigger choirs and different forces, but they will write contemporary music, often contemporary music that's based on Renaissance music or maybe plain chant. And we have done some pieces. We did a commission last year that was written for us by John McCabe. He wrote especially for us, so in 12 parts. And it's certainly something that we're open to exploring more, but the main emphasis will always be on the Stile Antico.
Okay. Now, I've talked to period instrumentalists, and they typically start on modern instruments, and then they sort of find their way to period instruments. Mm. A lot of times that's by accident. I'm wondering, as singers, how you found your way to this era and to this repertory.
Well, actually, Eleanor and I found our way in completely different ways. Didn't sing, well, I sang in school choirs when I was small, but I mainly sang secular music, I didn't sing in church very much. So it was only really when I went to college, when I went to university, that I had the opportunity to sing in a church choir. and become part of the big English choral tradition, which is so famous and has given us the basis for what we do. But I came to that relatively late, having done big band singing and that kind of stuff beforehand.
As I was really the opposite. I started singing in church when I was 7, and then joined a girls' choir, actually with the other members of the group. And our director really loved Renaissance music, so that was really what I was brought up on. And I think that's true of particularly many boys in the UK that are trained in the cathedrals. And of course, they'll be doing a wide range, they'll be doing later music, but they'll really be brought up on this church music tradition. But I think that there's less of a difference because we are still using our voices. We use them in different ways, but it's not like picking up a whole different violin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or learning new bowing or the techniques are very similar, particularly, in terms of ensemble techniques. I think the technique of singing is really similar.
Mm-hmm. What was it like performing at the BBC Proms?
It was wonderful. It's a big, obviously, as British musicians, it's the real pinnacle to have a concert at the Proms. You really arrived. Going back to our wish lists from 5 years ago, I don't think any of us were brave enough to say that we would have a concert in the BBC Prom series. And it was a kind of, pinch yourself to see that you're awake type experience, really. But so much fun and so rewarding and hopefully won't be the last.
Mm. And it was particularly exciting, I think, now that they have so much a bigger emphasis on these chamber music proms, because I think before we might have thought, well, I'm not sure performing in the Royal Albert Hall is quite right for our group. It's so big, and I mean, we're used to big churches, but it's not a church. It wouldn't necessarily carry our sound. But now that they have all these chamber proms, and it really is an important part of the prom season, they have a venue that really suits us, and it was a wonderful concert to perform.
So on the other side of the coin, what was it like performing with Sting?
Equally amazing, in totally different ways. I mean, we talked, it was a bit like seeing how the other half lives, because classical musicians have very different careers and trajectories to pop musicians. And the great thing about Sting is that he is so interested in musicians from all walks of life and of all cultures and traditions. That we had the opportunity not just to collaborate with Sting, but some really, really interesting folk musicians, orchestral musicians. He creates these kind of melting pots and, kind of throws everything in, gives it a mix, and is usually quite happy with what comes out. So that was really exciting.
And this actually was an instance of where we saw the sort of different styles of singing. I mean, we are classically trained, so we're not used to singing with microphones, for example. And suddenly we were in these big auditoriums, but with microphones, and it felt quite different to how we normally sing.
Did you have to sing differently?
Yeah, I think so. I'm just trying to think what differences we made. I think, obviously, with a microphone, you can make a kind of much croonier, smaller sound, and then obviously that gets translated. There are relatively few pop musicians who are trained to project in the same way that we have been trained. So it was, in a sense, pairing your voice right back to the kind of the barest minimum that was healthy, and then playing around with that and seeing what different effects you could find. But we were lucky. I mean, our touring with Sting tended to be sort of 3-week periods with lots of concerts. So it really evolved over the time, and that was very interesting as well.
Now, people may not realize this, but Stile Antico is something of a family affair. Now, Karis, you are married to Oliver, and there are 3 sisters as well in the ensemble. So I'm wondering how these family dynamics affect the dynamics of the relationship with the entire group, or do they?
Well, of course they do. I think a lot of those relationships were in place from day one. The sisters have been sisters for that long. Ollie and I got married later, but so it was an integral part of the way the group functioned from day one. So that's one way in which, it hasn't seemed weird, because it is just what it is. It is the way it is. But also, we spend so much time working with each other, travelling with each other, that actually, you develop these kind of relationships with people that go beyond merely being colleagues, because you spend so much time with each other. You know, it's just another kind of facet of how we work. It doesn't seem to cause more arguments than I think we'd have otherwise.
Or factions, maybe. Does that happen? You know, smaller groups sort of disagreeing artistically with another smaller group?
I think because we've worked so long with each other, it doesn't happen any more than it would otherwise. Of course, there are times when different people have different opinions on what we should be doing musically. But I think that would happen anyway.
Mm-hmm. I also think that, you know, all 12 of us have our own particular things that we like to, you know, concentrate on. You know, there's a couple of people who really concentrate on tuning, a few others who really concentrate on ensemble. Oliver's particular thing is, you know, making sure people have a real good grasp of a technique of singing to create a particular effect or colour. And so we tend to, in rehearsal, kind of work away at all of our individual preconceptions and preoccupations, and they kind of cross family lines, really, so that's useful.
Mm-hmm. So you have a new collection of Tudor Advent and Christmas music, and I think it's very different in mood from what people would normally associate with Christmas music on the surface. And I would really like you to talk about the musical selections that you made for that recording.
Yes, it is very different in that it's not got traditional Christmas tunes. I mean, if someone who doesn't know anything about the music listened to it, they wouldn't recognise it immediately as Christmas music. But it's based around this Talis Mass that Misapur and Artis Est. And then we've interspersed that with music by William Byrd, his Propus for Advent, other pieces. They're pieces that are not necessarily very well known. So we hope it will be a very interesting selection, but it still maintains the excitement of Christmas. Mm-hmm.
I guess we also wanted to give people an idea of what Christmas was like to, you know, the medieval worshipper, if you see what I mean. So, you know, obviously we're all very familiar with the kind of more carol-y traditional folk side of things, and I think less familiar with the sort of devotional music that was being used at this time of year in the churches themselves. So we not only have this huge, grand mass setting based on the plain chant of Puer Natus Est, a boy is born, but also a setting of the Magnificat, which is obviously a very important text for Christmas time because of its connection with Mary, and starting the disc, again, a piece by Talis, Videte Miraculum, which is, I think, one of the most beautiful pieces for that time of year. And I hope we will give the listener a sense of the atmosphere of quiet devotion and wonder that I think is so much a part of everybody's Christmas experience.
Mm-hmm. Quiet devotion, that's a lovely phrase. I was thinking serenity. There's a real serene kind of tone to the music on your recording. So I threw this out to Facebook fans of Sunday Baroque to see what they would like to ask you. And Nancy is one. She wants to know if you are familiar with the Italian lauda and if you plan to record any. And she says that you do such beautiful work that she thinks your performance of Italian lauda would be stunning. Her words.
Wow. I mean, Eleanor and I don't think are familiar with it, but if Nancy wants to drop by our Facebook page and give us some more details, then that would be great, because we're always looking for new projects and new ideas, and we're planning quite far ahead now for our recordings and things, because you know, which is I guess a byproduct of our success, so any idea is always gratefully received.
Apparently she is quite a fan, and she says there are very, very few recordings of music from the Italian lauda. So,
wow.
So there you go. So as singers, your bodies are your instruments. And I'm wondering how you stay fit, how you stay healthy, especially when you're on the road like this.
It is tough, especially coming over here with the jet lag to deal with. But we really have to just take the time to look after our bodies, for example, stretching, eating well, drinking a lot of water, which I think we all do as singers anyway.
I think also the great temptation when our group comes to America is we're all slightly obsessed with junk food. so having, you know, kind of pancakes and sausage and maple syrup so readily available is quite a temptation. So we tend to get those things out of our system in the first few days of tour and then go searching for the salad bowls and that kind of thing. But I mean, Eleanor's absolutely right. I think as a singer, you have such a responsibility to keep yourself in good physical shape. And we're lucky to be staying in, you know, some places with gyms, and there's the very funny sight of 6 or 7 members of an early music ensemble all down there every morning, you know, frantically trying to make sure the pancakes don't settle.
I think making sure that we get enough fresh air, that we're not constantly in air-conditioned rooms, and, you know, not too many flights if we can avoid it.
Yeah,
right. Do you build in sort of a buffer? For example, coming over here, you spoke of the jet lag. Do you build in maybe an extra couple of days so that you can adjust to the new time?
We've actually chosen one of the benefits of the fact that the group is run, you know, as a cooperative and from within the group, is that we have chosen not to pack our touring schedules really, really tightly, which obviously has financial implications for us, but means that we're not so very tired and under pressure, and it means that, you know, you don't have the terrible happening that you get 3/4 of the way through the tour and suddenly 3 people are down with a cold or that kind of thing. And it also means that, you know, you get a chance to see some of the places that you're visiting, and that's I think that's good for the soul, to be honest.
Yeah, that's one of the nicest things about singing with the group, is that it doesn't feel just like a job. We really enjoy traveling together, going and visiting these places, having nice meals. Mm-hmm. It's really good fun.
You've sort of given me a great jumping off point, because, you know, I think from the outside, people look at professional musicians and think that this is all you do, that, you know, you're just sort of 100%, 150% of the time steeped in this world. And you're all young. You're all in your 20s and 30s, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have lots of other interests and lots of other things that you enjoy doing besides music, which is, of course, your love. So I'm curious to know, what other kinds of interests do you and other members of the group have?
We're all voracious readers, which I think is, you know, useful when you're spending so much time, you know, flying and things. What other things?
All sorts of different things. It really varies. I mean, as I said, we all share this love of travel and fine food, you know, just enjoying time together, but we have these different interests. For example, I'm one of the few, well, actually both of us, two of the few that didn't actually study music. I studied math, and I don't spend my spare time doing maths, but as I enjoy sort of reading about these books, and we'll visit the odd museum, some of us like that.
My major, I guess you'd say, was in history, so getting the opportunity to, you know, travel abroad and go and see all these fantastic historical sites that I've really only read about is a real treat for me.
Different kinds of sports or exercise. I love walking, so anywhere we get with the countryside, I'll be out there in the gardens.
Yeah, one of our most epic arguments was on one of our big walks on a day off in the United Kingdom, where we were trying to work out whether the thing we were climbing was a hill or a mountain, and this went on for some hours. I'm not sure we ever resolved it, actually.
Sometimes you have to agree to disagree.
I think so.
Well, I have another question from a Facebook fan, Jerry. He is wondering how the economic travails of the world maybe have affected your vision, or maybe more practically how it's affected your, you know, your touring schedule and that sort of thing.
It hasn't affected us as badly as we'd feared, and as badly as I think it's affected some people. I think one of the advantages of working without a conductor is actually that it's
cheaper
to run. But it has meant, I mean, we've, you know, found that some of the concert promoters are less willing to take risks. They want to stick with the groups that are more established. So we've had a few difficulties persuading people to take the risks and to invite us for the first time. But actually, you know, this year, 2010, is our busiest year yet. It's just getting more busy.
I think it's also the case, certainly in the UK, that the real crisis in arts funding is yet to come. That 2010 was difficult in some ways, but actually the real cuts are coming in 2011. And I'm not aware of anything coming down the pipeline yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if things got a little more difficult in the next year. But as Eleanor says, I think we've been really lucky in the sense that our star rising in the business has come at a time where, you know, it has meant that, you know, we have still had the bookings, and we're very, very grateful for that.
This is also from Jerry. He was wondering what, if anything, you might change about yourselves or about the decisions that you've made along the way in your careers.
Gosh, that's a difficult one. I don't know. So much of what's happened to us in the last 5 years seems like decisions made by other people, not really by us, which, you know, seems like kind of, you know, it starting with being invited, obviously, to record for Harmonia Mundi, which was the beginning of everything. Then Music for Compline getting so popular in the US, which we felt we didn't have very much to do with, other than obviously having worked hard to record it. You know, it was picked up by radio stations and then by NPR, and much of our profile in the States came from that. And at the time, we were, you know, sitting in our houses in the UK thinking, gosh, we're so popular on the other side of the pond. But it felt so surreal and such a long way away. I don't think I'd change anything.
Yeah, I'm thinking I can't think of anything particular I would want to change. It more seems just the challenge is just maintaining things how they work, you know, always making sure that we have enough rehearsal time with 12 different busy people to come together, and not letting anyone get sucked up into this sort of professional world where it can't make time to really enjoy the music and to enjoy the company and to have fun on our tours.
I think Eleanor's right in the sense that the challenges for us is really how we move forward, not what's come behind us, because you know, the challenges of being a professional group, which we, you know, we basically have been since 2005, but now increasingly successful one, you know, mean that some of the ways we started running ourselves have now had to evolve, and sometimes that hasn't been particularly comfortable, and what's important to us is maintaining our friendships and our dedication to what we do, whatever the professional music world may throw at us. And I think those are the challenges that we'll be looking at, you know, over the next 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. More specifically, what is next for Stile Antico? Do you have anything on the blackboard that you can tell us about?
Well, we have a concert in Mexico at the end of the month, which we're very excited about, I think, Guanajuato, which we're very excited about. Obviously, the Puenatus Est CD is released in the States, I think, on the 12th of October. So we're excited to see, you know, what the response is to a CD that we're, you know, really proud of. And I think we all feel very emotionally attached to. And then coming up ahead, we're excited to be recording in the new year with Fretwork, which will be our next project. So that's a new challenge and something we're, as soon as we come back off tour, we'll be back in the rehearsal room sorting ourselves out for that.
It's a quite exciting project to be doing, because it's religious music, but music that was written for people to be using in their homes rather than in church, which I think is really interesting because it's very different. It's not the sort of music that people sing a lot, or the pieces that are, it's singing them in a different context, and it's something which really brings out the personal side of it.
Mm-hmm. It's all in English. All in English. Mm-hmm. And some of it will be with viols, some of it will be just voices. And lots of it, I think, hasn't been recorded before. You know, it involves some famous names like Dowland, but then some less well-known people like John Milton. You know, it's something we're really excited about.
Can't wait. When do you expect that will come out?
I think probably early 2012.
Okay. Well, Karis, Eleanor, thank you very much for making time to come and speak with me.
Pleasure.
Thank you.